Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Hey everybody, on this episode of the Legends of Tomorrow After Show, we're breaking down episode 4, season 3, Phone Home. Watch what happens when Ray Palmer goes back to 1988 to see himself. Plus, find out what cool costume Lex Michael is wearing next.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We've talked the whole night.
So thanks for joining, Lex.
I don't actually know all of the words to every song in Singing in the Rain.
Well, you could have fooled me. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Legends of Tomorrow After Show right here on AfterBuzz TV. We are breaking down every episode of Legends of Tomorrow, airing Tuesday nights, 9 o'clock on the CW here, at least locally here in Los Angeles. Los Angeles? That's where we live, right?
I think so.
Los Angeles.
I barely know where I am half the time.
I'm one of your hosts, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie.
I am another one of your hosts, Lex Michael. I am all over social media at the Lex Michael.
And, of course, Lucretia Lyon, Dave Child, the two people that round out this panel, the two people who, you know, sometimes it feels like we couldn't do the show without, have decided to trick us by treating themselves to a night of Halloween festivities.
I see what you did there.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're off else places being spooky.
Yes, there you go. So feel free to follow them on social media at MR Dave Child and Lucretia Lyon. You can easily find it because there is only one in regards to Lucretia. See what kind of cool photos they're posting from their Halloween shenanigans. And everybody, get ready. I know you're wondering, what is Lex Michael dressed as tonight? Lex, reveal to the crowd what your costume is.
I suppose I am a brand ambassador for the AMC network circa 2013.
That's a deep cut. I love it. Very nicely done. There you go.
Yeah, there it
well,
is.
There, you go.
There,
so, folks,
there it is.
there you go.
There it is.
I know you guys are wagering.
Just pulled myself right out of that hole you covered up and let me walk into.
That's right. So for those of you that are, you know, wagered properly on that guess, you know, collect those bets because you're pretty flush with cash by now, I'd imagine. But folks, you can always like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes, not just because you like the show, although we do appreciate that, but to keep our dearly, not departed, but beloved, Lex Michael alive and well. Right here, consistently on our panel.
Yeah, we're going to need a bit of an influx because I seem to have developed a resistance to the synthesized 5-star reviews that we were previously using. So, yeah, any validation.
Authentic, full-core 5-star reviews. A better thing to put in this Halloween basket than Snickers or Twix or Milk Duds.
Yeah, and the key really is that you can't cut it with anything.
That's true. There mm-hmm. you go. And, of course, you can subscribe to the YouTube channel, give it a thumbs up while you're there, and feel free to hop in the chat, share your thoughts about Legends of Tomorrow in general or anything that we're going to be talking about this episode specifically. And this was a nice little mashup. If you found, like, Legends of Tomorrow, Matt E.T. there,
yes,
you would get a show very much like this.
Really quick, because you mentioned following along in the chat, Lucretia is not here. Lucretia is typically our oracle. Are we in the booth? Is it possible for us to get the chat up in that window? Look, stuff's happening. Awesome. I feel so secure in this moment. But yes, a lot of ET stuff.
It was. It starts off as we ended last week's episode with Ray Palmer, young Ray Palmer, back in 1988, Ivy Town, escaping from some bullies, hiding out in a tunnel. And then he meets somebody much less mysterious than, of course, the teaser would make you think, or much less menacing than the teaser would make you think.
Well, so his eyes, right? It's the eyes and like the growly sound.
Yes.
Although it's totally possible, as we discover pretty quickly into this episode, right? It's a little baby Dominator, and the baby Dominator, cute as heck, by the way.
It's true.
The baby Dominator apparently has all of the same abilities as a fully grown Dominator without apparently their strategic decision-making ability. Though not for nothing, it seemed like that baby kept itself more or less contained and really only busted out its potentially dangerous powers at the opportune time.
That's true.
But all right, you know what? He could be wise beyond his years. But it's also possible, I suppose, that in the tag at the end of the last episode, maybe the little baby Dominator was making Ray see something potentially scarier, because the teaser at the or the tag at the end of the previous episode, it didn't necessarily look like a baby Dominator.
Very true. It looked much taller.
Yeah, it looked taller. It looked like, you know, the eyes didn't look the same. It looked like it was moving a little weird. So it's totally possible that as a defense mechanism, Gumball was making Ray see something a little spookier.
Yeah, speaking of that episode, that teaser from the end of episode 3, the way that is set up and shot, as we see young Ray on his bike trying to flee from these bullies, we find out this episode, though, they kind of played a little fast and loose, try to make it seem much more suspenseful than it really was, because this episode really sets up that he's unaware that those bullies are true bullies. He thinks they're just friends giving him a hard time.
It's interesting because very early in the episode, especially, it's like once they first see young Ray walking around, and like he seems so positive and so pure. And early on in the episode, I found myself like sitting back and looking at grown up Ray, thinking, "Wow, how is it possible that this dude stayed like from childhood, made it into adulthood, and still retained that positivity, that optimism? How is it possible that somebody this pure wasn't completely destroyed by the world as it exists?" Denial,
yeah, well, or possibly it's just a constant choice. You could definitely let yourself, all the effects of the world, the effects of things happening on your life, weigh you down and choose to be more bitter and resentful. I think it's a tougher thing to stand in the face of that and just, you know, try to keep that positive, optimistic viewpoint.
Absolutely. It also seems a little bit like Ray genuinely didn't know. Like, you had that moment where grown Ray was watching these two guys pick on his younger self, and he has this moment where he puts together finally, oh, maybe we weren't friends.
True. And I don't know if that, as a young kid, you're thinking the best of people, as opposed, so you're not really seeing their true, I don't want to say like menacing, but just... Nah, and even nefarious might be too strong of a word, but they're just their poor intentions towards somebody, and just mistaking them for just like playful.
Well, I think part of it's that, and I think, you know, young Ray is depicted certainly not as being particularly sad, but I think definitely depicted, and it's subtext more than it's actual text for most of the episode, but is being pretty isolated and pretty lonely, so much so that, yeah, he doesn't want to part with Gumball because Gumball is basically his only friend at that point. So I can buy, if you're that, especially if you're that young and you're that open-minded, open-hearted, and you are that isolated and you do feel that lonely, that even these two guys who are, from a third-party perspective, clearly picking on you, just the fact that they're around and they're paying attention to you.
Yes.
It's like if you can focus on that and not willfully ignore but overlook entirely the fact that they're choosing to be around you for not super nice reasons, it's totally possible.
So this episode starts off with young Ray on the run, basically, and we see some men in black stop him as he's about to go into this room to get this creature, which we don't know, at least at the point, is a young Dominator. We see as he tries to make a move to go, because I'm a kid, you're not going to hurt a kid, they end up killing him.
Right. So the implication would be then in the version of history where that doesn't happen, where when we catch up with him again, he's already got Gumball in his home.
Because I guess they went back in time before, because he found Ray, and then they found young Ray found the Dominator. Then the Men in Black found him,
right?
And they got back to that point before those.
Before the Men in Black. Okay, yeah. I was, because that was the one thing that I was a little bit like I spaced on at some point during the episode about the exact sequence, the sequence of events, and then the altered sequence of events.
Yeah.
But in my head, I was like, well, maybe like he went into that facility and then like Gumball like brain zapped the dudes so they didn't kill him or something. But that makes way more sense.
So the big thing, and I guess we'll just ask this right away. I'm going to ask you this.
Yeah.
What do you think? These men in black, do you think they're the Time Bureau?
No.
Do you think they're truly men in black?
I think they're the same people or tied to the same people that we saw in the crossover from
last
year.
Gotcha, yeah. Some of the government officials.
Like one of them who grows up to be Donnelly Rhodes.
Yes.
In the crossover, Doc from Battlestar Galactica. I assumed that they were tied to that same arm of the government.
Because it's tough when you have them basically wearing the same kind of outfits that the
they don't have the pins.
Ah, that's true.
It's the pins. It's like you got to key in on the word. Plus, the Time Bureau has like it's like a dark blue suit, isn't it? More of like we watch on TVs where sometimes like the color clarity is a tiny bit off. If it's deep shades, sometimes it can be easy to mistake a deep blue for a light black. Is that a thing?
Maybe.
But yeah, I think their suits are black versus a dark blue, and then they don't have the pins. So that alone, right. I figured, yeah, they're not. Plus, they're using pretty standard government-issue technology on their person. Like, obviously, they've got very advanced tech in the facility where they're keeping Gumball, but they have, you know, they have guns. They don't have, you know,
true.
Fancy time guns. They
just have... It was me trying to look for, me making that leap perhaps I shouldn't have for, thinking, oh, hey, this is kind of tying into what they discussed last episode, where, like, any kind of authority will ultimately turn corrupt. And then you start seeing not that they're just protecting time, but by doing it by eliminating threats as opposed to just returning aberrations back to their proper points in time.
Yeah. It's, but, I mean, we're,
that's,
we're
that's
so,
a big stretch. That was a big, big
but we're also, I mean, we're so early in the season, right, that we have no idea how, for example, in the case of the Time Bureau, how that's going to play out yet.
Yeah.
It's like so hard because now it's just we're predicting wildly this early into the show. But it's like I could see a bunch of different scenarios with the Time Bureau playing out. And I also see how I think as a bureaucracy, they're not going to be all that interested in whatever Rip's personal history with the Legends may or may not have been. And I wonder if at some point does that potentially create conflict between Rip and the body of the organization that he founded? I don't know.
That's true, yeah, and that could very well happen. I'm thinking, at least for right now, we haven't seen that as of yet.
Well, I feel like we've only begun to just scratch at what the Time Bureau is. Like, we've gotten, like, the info dump about, like, what they represent and what their actual job is meant to be, but we don't know much about the inner workings of the agency necessarily other than the couple of faces that we've met.
True, and I have a feeling once we kind of pull the trigger on Malice and we introduce him and we start seeing him play a more active role in the season, then we might start seeing what some fractures starting to happen within the Time Bureau.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the direction they want to go in.
What do you just, you know, usually save predictions for the end of the show, but just I'll ask one for right now. Just a little mini prediction. Uh-huh. What do you think the odds are that the Time Bureau remains intact at the end of the season?
I would say greater than 50%.
Okay.
I would say greater than 50%. Now, if you asked me what the odds are of Rip still being in charge of the Time Bureau by the end of the season, I would say under 50%.
And if he's not in charge of that, is he back with the Legends?
I don't know. A part of me would think that would be the obvious direction to take him back in, but I also think he works so much better as an outside party that is around, that is very much right. A presence, but that gets to act in whatever capacity he does as a foil for them. If he's not running the Time Bureau anymore, I'd be totally cool with Rip just being like a rogue agent, moving through time, trying to correct anomalies, occasionally bumping into the Legends and being like, you guys, shaking a newspaper at him, being like, stop it. And then going off on his merry.
Well, I mean, so far, this is what, episode 4 right now, and we've seen Rip in one episode.
How many episodes is this season? Is it another? Because I know the first season was like only 13 or so.
Yeah,
and season 2 was 18?
18, and I don't know if this got 22 or 18 again.
Somebody in the chat, can you let us know? Do our jobs for us. Can you let us know conclusively how many episodes there are this season? Is it another 18, or did they bump it up to 22? Because you're right. Out of 4 episodes, Rip Hunter has only appeared in 25% of them so far.
And Ivan Soto there in the chat says, Arthur Darvill has said that Rip kind of regrets creating the Time Bureau and he misses being with the Legends.
Luna Malfoy 7 says it's 19. Thank you. Right. Mindmorph says Rip has 2 more shoes left. Is this a reference that I'm missing?
Just 2 more shoes. That's it. I hope he doesn't run out of them.
Oh. I mean, do they match?
I
wouldn't it suck
shows?
If you only had 2 shoes left and they were both the left foot?
Yeah, that would be. But if that's the case, like 16, 17, 19 through 23, if that's the case, then that's like a long stretch of time that we would be without Rip this season. So I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, certainly we missed him for the first half of last season, and he really didn't come in until the mid-season return.
But I thought last season they utilized him so effectively. I thought the idea of Rip as an antagonist, whether fully of his own volition or not, is a great one, which is why, yeah, I'm hoping that he can stick around in some capacity, but that they don't fold him fully back into the team. Because, yeah, I think he doesn't necessarily need to be a villain, but I think him as a foil is where he is best utilized.
Because I imagine by the end of the season, it's going to have to be that Rip and the Legends are going to have to team up to defeat Malice.
Oh, yeah.
And whatever, whoever. And again, it's Gary. Well, of course, we're going to have Gary.
And Gary. It's not for nothing. If Rip is not running the Time Bureau and there's still a Time Bureau, I nominate Gary.
Oh, all right. Mm-hmm. I would not disagree with you there.
He's like the underdog, but through fortuitous circumstance, which of course will involve catastrophe and tragedy, I'm sure. But he's able to, this dude, pure of heart, the symbol of everything that you want the Time Bureau to be, all of a sudden, unexpectedly ascends to this position and does exactly the right stuff and shepherds us into a new age of time bureaucracy. That is good.
I like to think that Gary is really Malice slow playing everybody.
God, that would hurt so much. I'm already we're four episodes in. Gary's been in what, one and a half of them? I'm so attached already.
So cutting back to our legends, of course, we join them in present day with Ray wanting to do some team building. And the best team building, in his opinion, is like, why don't we start off with two truths and a lie? Have you ever done two truths and a lie?
I'm sure a decade ago, or maybe, you know, like in like some drama program as like an ice breaking activity. Right. Maybe. I'm sure I have. I could not tell you. At summer camp, perhaps.
Okay. Do you want to give me two truths and a lie right now? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Do I have to?
Well, why not? Let's just see. Let's see. I mean, you know.
Vamp while I
all
think
right, vamp,
of something.
What you think of that? All right. So
I'm trying to remember facts about myself.
No, there you go. As he digs into his Lex Michael database. So of course Ray's wanting to do this with a team. And since nobody seems to be keen on two truths and a lie, he decides, you know, the best thing to do is, you know, trust falls. Who doesn't like a good trust fall? And he's paid Mick to, of course, do this with him. So why not to ensure that somebody will do it with you, then just pay them off.
I remember two truthful things about myself, and great. Now I'm trying to come up with something that is nonsensical.
Okay, all right. Well, you don't want to be so nonsensical that I wouldn't buy it.
No, but it's right. It's got to, like, I have to now fabricate.
That's right.
A lie efficiently.
Okay. I understand.
Keep vamping. You're basically doing a show by yourself, right, until I can think of a third thing.
I'm not afraid of that. So Mick goes and does the trust fall, but that is the moment when the dead Ray, his death kind of ripples through the time continuum and catches up to adult Ray, and he disappears. And they realize, uh-oh, young Ray's been killed back in 1988. They head back to put a stop to this.
Hey, guys, sorry to jump in. We do have one in the chat.
Oh, let's see. You guys think that...
Wait, what was it? Who said that?
Oh, let's see.
Mindmorph, I hope I'm pronouncing that somewhat correctly. I like to lie. I don't lie. And I wore two shoes.
There you go. All right. Well, let's see. What are the two truths and a lie right there?
I feel like I get through number two and I'm stuck.
That's right.
I feel like that's the idea. I feel like, yes. What? Ivan Soto missed my enthusiasm. Thanks.
Who doesn't? Who does not miss Lex Michael on a regular basis?
I don't know. My parents.
Get out of here. How dare you?
Okay. Man.
All right.
I still can't think of a good lie. I keep remembering other things that I've actually done, and I go, oh, that's all right. That's interesting.
Well, you know what? We will. Whenever you're ready, you let me know, and we'll play two truths and a lie.
I forgot one of the factual things.
All right.
And
well,
the time it took you to say
we
that.
We still have 30 minutes and 3 seconds to break down the show, Lex.
And the next 29 and a half minutes.
This is gonna be
sitting
a
here quietly trying to think of
all
a
right.
third.
I love it.
All right, yeah, go.
So they decide they have to head back to 1988 Ivy Town to stop them. So we've got that is one storyline, and we'll follow that a little bit. But let's take a sidetrack to pursue a little bit of storyline with good old Stein, Jax, and a little bit of Mick there, where people are thinking, hey, wait, Stein is being kind of grumpy. He doesn't want to be here. He's being kind of secretive. Could he be a traitor? Could he be reporting us to the Time Bureau?
So, okay. Obviously, we're laying the groundwork for what we know is Victor Garber's impending departure from the show. And I actually really like where we ended up with this B-plot. I think some of the hoops we jumped through to get there were a little wonky.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, for example, Jax accepted the idea that maybe Stein was selling them out real quick. Like, he went from, no, there's no way, to, oh, my God, this is definitely what's happening in about half a second.
Yeah.
And I get it. We have 42 minutes to tell this story, and we have even less time to tell the B plot. So, all right, we got to get from A to B in relatively short order, but, like, quick turns like that just felt abrupt to me. I didn't totally understand, even once Stein explained it, why he felt he had to lie about it.
I mean, I guess just because he knows how now kind of the shoe in the other foot, where it was more important for Jax to be doing this, and Stein was not as keen anymore because he's got Lily, his family's going to be a grandfather. I guess he's less excited about this ongoing mission.
Well, no, that I totally get. Yeah. I don't get why Stein felt... All right. I get why he couldn't tell everybody that he wanted to be there for the birth of his grandchild. And of course, once that comes out, Jax is like, of course, why would you think I wouldn't want you to be there for that?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes total... Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Even once Stein explained his reasoning, I was still sitting there going... This seems like the type of thing you could have told them.
Yeah.
Maybe not the I don't want to be on the ship anymore is a totally separate conversation that, yes you're going to have to sit everybody down and have that conversation at some point. But no, just being present at the birth of your grandchild, to me, seemed like exactly the way Jax reacted. It's like, why would you think anything else?
As Min Morph says, the B-plot was rushed and awkward. I would agree with that. I mean, I think like it was... I agree with Lex. Where it got to was a good point, but it was a little kind of...
I really liked the scene after the birth of little Ronnie, which I thought was cute, that he's named after Ronnie Raymond. I liked the moment of... or the little scene of Stein and Jax and Rory in the hallway. I liked that Rory offered a cigar to a baby, and you know he was only sort of joking.
Yeah,
you know, if they hadn't stopped him, if Jax and Stein had both gone, ha, 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 he would have probably lit the cigar and put it up to the baby's face.
It is interesting, though, just in this new kind of time stream that we are in, where Lily has always been in Stein's life, what the relationship with Ronnie Stein and Lily was growing up. Because it seems weird for Lily wanting to call her son Ronnie, because we know that at least... From our perspective, they've never met because Ronnie was out of the picture before time was changed, at least in our watching of the show. But now knowing that, of course, time has been rewritten and Ronnie was back there in time when Lily was also part of Stein's life.
Right. It was like, did they have much of a relationship, or is it a situation where it's like, okay, well, I know that my dad was somehow weirdly metaphysically bonded to this guy, and together as a unit, they saved the world together, etc.
So true.
And he perished tragically saving the world. It's like naming your firstborn after a war buddy who sacrificed himself for you.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I mean, because without all of that, it wouldn't have led to Jax, which wouldn't have led them to the Legends, which is the Aberration. Boom.
Right. They still, in a way, it's like, I was going to say, like, they owe Ronnie immensely for his sacrifice, because in sacrificing himself, he enabled everybody else to not die quite so much. Their lives as they still exist, they owe to him in a way as well. Whether or not Lily and Ronnie actually had any concrete relationship in this version of the timeline.
So it's it was a nice little touchstone. Make sure that Ronnie Raymond is not forgotten.
I figured it out. I got two truths and a lie.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, the moment you have not been waiting for is happening right now.
Figured it out. But if I give two truths and a lie, you better also come with two truths and a lie.
All right.
Even if that means I got a vamp for like, I'll just grab your notes and be like, this also happened. I'm
good
Frank
luck,
Moran
good
now.
Good luck reading this chicken
scratch.
Yeah,
I have no idea what any of those symbols mean.
All right. Okay. Ladies.
Ooh. Ready? Ready? Ready?
All right. Thanks, Michael. Lay it on me. Your two truths and a lie.
Okay. Ready?
Yes.
I have three cats. I'm in a David Cronenberg movie. I was born in Brazil.
Ladies and gentlemen, one more time for everybody in the chat to hear them. Three cats in a David Cronenberg film and born in Brazil. Feel free to chime away in the chat, too, if you...
We'll reveal it at the end of the program.
That's true, yes.
So you better come with, like, two lies and a truth of your own.
There you go. I will come up with mine in just a matter of minutes, and then we'll let the chat kind of stew on that, and we'll reveal our answers at the end of the program.
Bonkers. All right, am I just vamping now?
No. We're going to keep going on.
Are we going to do a trust fall, and you're going to vanish?
That's right.
Yeah.
Come to me, Lex.
I'm not doing it.
So they head back to 1988 at Hill Valley, and it's always a nice moment where you get to interact with your younger self, at least even from a distance. And I do like that Ray's first inclination is like, we got to go to this cool pizza place. We got to go to this cool video store. Because I imagine if you bring in your friends.
Sorry, it's bugging me. I can't remember the name of the pizza place now, but I remember having a moment where he said the name of the pizza place, and I was like, ha. That's the best. Not because it's a reference to anything.
Yeah.
I was just like, I wish I had a pizza place called that near me, and I would be so I would be massive. I would just be eating whole pizzas 4 times a day if I have. But I can't remember the name of the.
Look at that, boy.
Lex is defo a crazy cat lady.
Yep. All right.
Defo.
And Evan Soto cannot remember the name of the pizza place either. Thank you, Evan.
And Seb Russ also thinks I have 7 cats.
That's right.
Okay.
There you go.
Is it Pizza Palace? What's it, Pizza Palace?
Pizza Palace, that sounds like a good place.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know why it like set off, if that's what it is, I don't know why that set off like fireworks in my brain.
But
it could have been, I ate a protein bar like halfway through this episode. I might have been really hungry when he mentioned Pizza Palace.
Yeah.
And that's probably what did it.
Now Lex has beef. Thank you, Nate. So, but I like that because if you're bringing your friends back to your like hometown, especially from when you were a kid, you want to show them.
Yeah, it's like, oh my god, we got to do this, and we got to do this, and we got to do this, and like the nostalgia trip for him too.
Yeah, it's like so many things, so little of it had to do with that. Oh yeah, I guess I'm supposed to die, and I guess we better solve that too. But in the meantime, guys, let me take you to these really cool spots first.
Right,
and then we can get back to you know saving me. Eh?
But again, it's like well, this one is a little different because if Ray is potentially dying on. Whichever timeline is splintering off from whatever point, then you do have to deal with adult Ray blipping in and out of reality. But if it wasn't one of your team members, in theory, they still do have a time machine. So as we've discussed, in theory, they could just go on a whirlwind tour of this entire town that lasts a month and then get down to business, unless somebody else is messing with time at the same time. That's really the only situation in which there's intense urgency. When you have a time-traveling ship is if somebody else is actively messing with time that you have to stop, I would think.
Yeah. It's, I feel like, you know, yeah, you've got, that's always with these time-travel shows. It always gets tough where you're like, all right, how much time can we just, like, spend out having fun, or how much time do we need to be focusing on this?
The Queen of Regal says, Lex Gat Child's Beef.
Yeah.
Which I am now getting tattooed over across my shoulders.
We do have this moment too with Zari, who's like, yeah, this is her first like kind of introduction on a regular basis into the dynamics of the team.
Yes.
So she's kind of figure out like what is everybody's kind of deal, even though she kind of name checks everybody very quickly at the top of the episode about what their deal is. I feel like her and Ray having a conversation about his somewhat eternal optimism, and it's like, why do you keep acting like this? That's creepy and weird.
Yes.
And like Ray saying, like, why not be positive?
Right. And like you were saying before, it's about making that choice because the world is horrifying. The world has always been horrifying. And the more access to information that we have, the more horrifying we all realize that the world is. So like, I do agree with you. I agree with you completely that optimism, to an extent...
It looks like someone looked up the pizza place, and Ivan Soto says it's Pizza Master.
Oh. Pizza Master! That's what it was. Pizza Master. Yes!
Look at that.
I know. I get it now. I'm back to the fire. Thanks. I'm now back to the fireworks in my brain. Pizza Master. Love it. Yes, to one extent or another, and yes, this is definitely more difficult if you are dealing with, say, depression. It is not as simple as flipping a switch and making a choice to be optimistic. But to an extent, you do have to condition yourself to approach things in as optimistic a way as possible. And I like, we don't sit in that for too long in this episode, but I like with one line, Ray is able to convey exactly that. The fact that positivity, if you're in a position to make the choice, is a choice. And if you just follow that, especially too, if you've been doing it since childhood, I would imagine as a reflex, it's like you work that muscle, becomes a little bit easier. Yeah, follow through on that. Also, you brought up Zari, and I thought a couple of things over the course of this episode. One, she's fitting in pretty well immediately.
Yeah,
she even got a sweet costume when all the legends like show up to go trick or treating at the end of the
down
episode.
Down into that ISIS, man.
That
yes,
but then also, oh, hang on.
Here we go. We got Star Drew.
Star Drew says, "I got 2 truths and a lie." Frank liked the girl strip movie / Frank watches Boo 2 / Frank watches Boo 2 before Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, thank you, Star Drew.
Wait, hang on.
Yes.
If you watch Boo 2 before Thor Ragnarok, then you've retroactively made the second one true as well, because you've also watched Boo 2. So if 3 is true, 2 has to be true.
Oh, so Then I guess we know what the lie would be there then.
Did you not like Girls Trip?
I never saw Girls Trip.
You didn't see it?
No.
Oh, it's dude, it's good.
Oh, is it?
It's all actually right. quite good.
I mean, I saw, was it Rough Night? And I was like, ugh.
I did not see Rough Night. But Girls Trip, I wouldn't have thought I was the audience for. It's great.
All right.
It's really good.
And you can take that to the Lex Michael Bank right there.
But so we really didn't get to the bottom of that one. So
no,
you
no,
didn't.
I have not seen.
Also, Frank likes Girls Trip would be the lie because you haven't even seen it.
Yes.
Okay, so we solved that puzzle.
There you go.
So did you see Boo 2 before Ragnarok?
I have to go see Boo 2.
Now you have
I lost a bet and I have to go see it. I have not seen it yet, Star Drew, but I will be going to see this.
Okay.
Oh, dear Lord. Yes.
Oh, I went on an emotional journey just now.
So, of course, we get to have Ray going back to his childhood home because he's looking for the baby Dominator.
Yes. Oh, I totally got sidetracked by what was happening in the chat. The other thing I wanted to say about Zari, and I'm jumping to the end of the episode, the last conversation that she and Ray have in the episode where they do they reprise the two truths and a lie, and it's the what was it, oh god, what was the first Z, back home everybody called me Z, all my friends call me Z. Second one was I got Legend of Zelda but couldn't beat the final boss. Sidebar, Ray Palmer's delivery of Ganon, amazing, wonderful. But also, you know that one's a lie immediately, because if you buy a Zelda game and you're talking to somebody who probably likes Zelda, you're going to specify which Zelda. Unless you mean specifically the original, in which case I think you'd still say the original, because I feel like most Zelda fans would then ask you, which one? Do you mean like Link's Awakening, Link to the Past, Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, Majora's Ocarina of Space thing. Anyway, this third one was the third one. Third one was I love musicals, right?
Yes.
And then they have that moment where, you know, it's like, well, Z, we're going to go watch Singing in the Rain or whatever. That moment, so much more organic chemistry just in that scene than in any other attempted romantic pairing for Ray Palmer since the beginning of the show.
I would agree.
And it felt so, if they, and I hope they don't, like, force it in that direction, because we've seen what happens when such attempts are made. Hot girl. I feel like there's actually an opportunity here for some type of romantic chemistry in a way that I don't feel that often between the characters on this show. I think they function really, really well as an ensemble, as a team, as a unit. I don't feel sparks flying between too many of them, except obviously Nate and Amaya, and they've got that whole romantic B or C story, depending on the episode. But I really actually feel like, oh, okay, there's stuff going on here, and she's like spent the most time with Kid Ray, so she spent more time around him to see the elements of his personality that have always been there since he was at his most pure. She can now track it and see more of that in grown Ray than maybe the rest of his teammates are able to, and that has to bond you to somebody.
True, yeah, where it doesn't feel like, because at the beginning of the episode, is it just a fake? Are you doing this to see that it's, nope, he's had this since he was a little kid. It can give you a better perspective on somebody. Do you feel that, here we go, also Sarah and Leonard had great chemistry?
Agreed, agreed, but Leonard is no longer a full-time member of the team.
Yes, which, I mean, and they even name-checked that back in Flash a few episodes ago.
All the people that have died.
Yeah, and then they threw, like, we're at Snart's funeral.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But we know he did, like, he sacrificed himself in season one, and presumably in our timeline, or the main timeline, then they, you know, the Legends came back. In the crossover, I think they mentioned that they lost Snart. And then Snart, they must have had a service after that, which would have been the better part of a year later, but maybe it just didn't occur to the Legends to go back and tell anybody, I guess, until then.
Yeah.
And they told Barry, and Barry's like, well, dang, we should do something, no?
Shouldn't we? Please? Go. Yeah, should we go get him? Let's see. Oh, Ivan Saito. Nice, Frank. Happy you mentioned it. Yep, I'm not happy about it. But no. I still feel like that's one of the biggest losses for Legends of Tomorrow.
Which is?
That you've just kind of taken Snart off the table.
I was under the impression when Wentworth Miller signed that overall deal that we'd start seeing more of him, but I think we've seen him, what? I think he popped up on Flash once at the end of last season.
Yeah, he came for like that one like quick cameo early in the season.
Well, there's
where he's seeing something and he imagined it was Snart.
Yes.
And then it was that last episode.
It was the King Shark episode.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just feel like to take that character off on Legends, I feel like there are some characters you can kill in a show, and it, that's fine. But I feel like there are some characters that have a greater universal use. And I feel like Snart is one of those characters that could be great. I'd love to see him in an Arrow episode, but also just the Flash. I mean, Captain Cold is just one of those great, constantly recurring Flash villains.
Yeah, it's not so much that they took him off of Legends, although that by itself is a bummer. It's that right now they're not really using him anywhere.
Yeah, and that's such a great character, and I feel like it makes it difficult to use him now because you have to justify, we even have to go in the past to grab him, but never really tell him that in the present he's dead. And I feel like that's just so many layers of complexity.
Well, I feel like the easy workaround would be what they did with Katie Cassidy, which is you kill off whatever iteration of that character they're playing on the main timeline of the show, and then you just pull in Earth whatever version of that character, because now she's around right fairly full time on Arrow as Black Siren, and I really 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 dig her as a Black Siren. I feel like you could just as easily pull a Snart from another dimension, and yes, it's not going to be the exact same Snart. It's, for all intents and purposes, a different person. But if you search the multiverse long enough, you could probably find a Snart that is similar enough where you could forge over time the same type of bond and not have to deal with the baggage of, oh, but you're also totally dead.
That's true. And as Ivan Sutter says in their chat, Leonard is coming back soon. Honestly, I will be not soon enough. And if he's going to be in this crossover, that's fantastic. But I just want him to be an ongoing presence in the present day DC TV universe. So that way we can use him easily at any time that you want. So anyway, there you go. That was my little rant about Snart.
All right, so where are your two truths and a lie?
Oh, we're doing
the girl strip one doesn't count.
No?
You were given that.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't given one.
Oh, well, fine. Let's see. Okay, we're going to need 1 second.
Is that all right? I'm going
to
vamp.
I had my three. And then so now I'm down to two. I forgot one of my facts.
All right, I'm totally going to vamp. I liked the little kid that was playing young Ray quite a bit.
I did like him. He did a really good job.
Quite, like, every moment of his that felt awkward in exactly the way it was supposed to. It felt like he was an awkward little kid, not he was an awkward child actor who didn't know how to do it. And I feel like that's tough. I feel like maybe the single most noteworthy thing about Stranger Things, show that does quite a bit pretty dang well, single most noteworthy thing about it is the fact that they have that many child actors on that show that are that good. It's hard to find one that is that good, let alone a small ensemble of them. I thought this kid was really great, really adorable. I thought his bond with Gumball was heartbreaking. I have a hard time with anything that aggressively cute. Because, like, this is how my brain works. Something that adorable and that pure, my brain immediately goes to the impermanence of all things. And I think anything that beautiful and great and pure cannot possibly be long for this world, and then my heart starts breaking. I'll work this out. Therapy probably will help with thoughts like that. I don't know. But, like, heartbreaking. Like, truly, truly heartbreaking, that moment when he leaves. And, like, you know, obviously, Gumball's going to be happy. He's with his mom. He's going to be totally fine. He's going to grow up, be a Dominator, do awesome Dominator stuff. They're super tall. That seems like it must be fun. But, yeah, like, Ray loses his old buddy at the end, but then gets a whole bunch of, like, tall grown-up friends in great costumes.
But I will say there at the end when he goes, like, but, you know, now I got a bunch of people that are always be looking out for me. I'm like, they'll be looking out for you for the next few hours, and then they're all gone, kid, because I got to head back to the present.
Yeah, oh my God, that conversation too, where it's like the two bully kids are like, wow, they're really cool. And then they go peace to get more candy. The scene we didn't see was the conversation where they all tell young Ray that, oh no, we're all leaving you too.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, Ray.
I like to think that scene where the two bully kids acknowledge that, like, oh, you're with these, like, this is pretty cool, maybe they'll start to be a little nicer to Ray from now on, is the hope that I have in the back of my head.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
So, like, you just proved your bona fides to us. You got coolness. You just, like, whipping coolness at us.
Whipping coolness. All right. You know, actually, the I feel like Jax had to restrain herself from wanting to flame on, because that would have really tipped the hand that really they weren't really costumes.
We haven't. Sorry, we haven't even mentioned the fact that Gumball made all of the agents do the number from Singing in the Rain.
Yes,
and you gotta wonder: is everyone at this agency a trained singer and dancer? Do they do, like, a company musical annually? Or is the mental power of the Dominator such that they can not only beam all of the choreography into your head, but can actually make your body limber and pliable enough to pull all these steps off?
You cannot tell me that being musically trained and proficient aren't essential elements of being an agent, because you never know when singing and dancing can get you out of any situation.
Well, I mean, what? Honestly, though, you think about, like, if you are an agent at the peak of your physical conditioning, right? Your body must be in great shape. I assume, like, you know, you've done your stretches. Your lung capacity, if you're running, if you're swimming laps in the pool, right? Your lung capacity is probably pretty solid.
Yeah.
Now, yes, if you have no singing or dancing experience at all, the adaptation process maybe wouldn't be instantaneous, but you would definitely be, I would think, in better shape to adapt to that than, say, I don't know, you or me right now in this moment.
Yeah. All right. So before we get going out here, because we're running out of time, I will say my two truths and a lie. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. My two truths and a lie.
Okay.
Is that I don't talk about big fan of country music. One of my guilty pleasures. We'll say that. The other one is that David Carradine once told me to shut up. And that I have enough t-shirts, that I could go 3 years without ever wearing the same shirt twice. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Those are my two truths and a lie.
Oh, man.
All right.
See, like, I'm really hoping it's the country music thing, but the t-shirt thing was real specific.
Mm-hmm.
Was so specific that either you actually have counted out every one of your shirts or you just made that up.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, as we break down the rest of this episode, we do have a little bit of the Nate and Maya, as you talked about, sometimes a B, sometimes a C plot.
Yes.
A little bit of that kind of friction between them, because, of course, Nate, I feel like almost deliberately was playing up to, like, oh, you know, hey, I'm single and, you know, I can flirt with people. And,
right.
What, are you jealous of Maya?
Hitting on Ray's mom. I will say, I realized at some point during this episode, I could watch the two of them do anything and or nothing, because they are really excellent together.
I did like Nate's line where he wants to go back the second time to check on Ray's mom. I was like, how do I look? I'm going to go. I did like just that little bit of line. I thought that was nice. Nicely done by good old Nate.
Yeah, well, like as we alluded to earlier, I mean, the two of them have such crazy, crazy good chemistry. And I like, yes, you can tell a story about the two of them in a relationship and still create a whole bunch of interesting scenarios and drama that aren't, are they going to break up or not? But I really like the dynamic as, like, will they, won't they exes between the two of them. I think that's, like, the sweet spot for those two characters to be, yeah, at least right now. And I think the way they play all of that material is, like, dead on.
Now, one other scene that I thought was a good moment, too, was just Ray hearing his mom talk about, you know, just kind of really kind of lets the veil kind of down when she doesn't know that the both of them can hear, young Ray and adult Ray can hear her talking to Nate and Maya about, you know, the dumb things that he builds and, you know, letting
him strays. Which, not for nothing, whether he can hear you or not, that's a pretty crappy thing to think about your kid.
But yeah, there are some things when you don't think that they're there that you just kind of, you can drop your guard down. You say that unfiltered thing.
I hope that she's just venting and frustrated and not like she genuinely thinks that Ray's clear intellectual prowess and ambition is a bad thing somehow.
That's true. But sometimes the parents will say kind of a mean thing, whether intentionally or not, just whether because she is frustrated that Ray's already made her come home from work twice. So it could be that moment of frustration. She just kind of says something and kind of says that darker thought that she probably wouldn't ordinarily say.
Right. Yeah, I definitely think it is coming from a place of frustration. I don't think Ray has a bad mom, if only because, like, Ray turned out pretty all right.
Yeah.
I do. I was actually fooled for a minute when Nate does go back to the house and the faux Ray mom was just like real, like just all about it. It took me a second to be like, what? Oh, what is happening? Like, but this is so.
I know that made me think that Ray's mom like said, you know what? I think this animal control person is definitely coming back. I better get ready, just
or
in
maybe
case.
That's just like what she
She does. Just
well, maybe she just no, but like maybe she just hangs out like not because she's waiting on anybody. Maybe she just likes like that's how she likes to relax at home.
Just get really gussied up
just
in
have,
a row.
Like, just have like a bottle of wine or something nearby and like just drink from a glass and like watch some trashy primetime TV and just like kick back and feel like good about yourself. And then you look through the keyhole and you're like, oh, it's that cute animal control guy. Nope. Well,
hubba hubba.
But of course, as it turns out, Nate makes out with the Dominator.
That's true. And so, of course, we've got the Dominator after Nate and Amaya. We've got Ray, young Ray.
Sorry, the idea that that was the Dominator's plan, too, is hilarious to me.
I'm just going to have just do some kind of intimacy with this human animal control person and get the information that I need. Although, I guess by reading Sarah's mind, realizes that, yes, he's part of the Legends team. So he probably recognizes him. Sorry, it's somebody that can get me one step closer to getting my young Gumball back.
Totally. I like that the plan was to make out with him.
That's right. And then we've got the two Rays and getting Gumball to them as well. And we get a nice moment, which we speculated last week. Would we see bicycles flying and would they be in front of a moon? And Dave Child thought, like, nope, that's too much copyright infringement. We'll see them, like, maybe dip.
No.
This was nice. Paragula. Full blown, boom. Not just one, two bikes, and Adam flying just right by.
It was so good. And I like the way that everybody's abilities in that moment fed into that image.
Yes.
Like, yes, of course, the image was there because we wanted to shoehorn in a very blatant reference to the iconography of E.T., but I like that the way they built into that moment felt very organic.
Yes.
And I like that Zari had an opportunity to use her powers, lift the bikes. I like that Gumball had a little moment where he peeked out and was just like, what's up?
The special effects of just the woods and the moon, I thought it all came together. It was very nice work on that. To put that together is a nicely realized shot.
I will say, overall, you didn't seem mad at any point during this episode.
No, usually I get really frustrated at the
with at least something. And no, your facial expression, as I've said before on this show, looks grave times.
That's true. It is when you watch me watching, I'm like.
And I didn't see that moment happen tonight. I think there was like a line or two maybe where you were like, but no, overall, I never watched your face fully drop.
No, that's true. There's something about like just that the child within that was delighted by this episode. And Star Drew says, I guess this wasn't time, Cop. I don't have hot beef on this episode. It is a rare occasion when I do not have hot beef about a Legends
Frank's
of Tomorrow show.
Hot beef.
I had no beef to serve.
Ooh, man.
And I know Lex has already eaten the protein bar, so it would have been a lot to require him to eat it. Luckily, there wasn't any to deliver. But
I have such strong feelings about everything that just happened.
All right, we're almost done. We're almost ready to wrap up here.
Jared Scoggin referencing the DeLorean, and I also thought, of course, cannot be a coincidence. Nate was wearing the tracksuit while he was watching the DeLorean, much like Biff in the altered 1985 at the end of Back
Nicely
to the Future.
Done.
Also, that driveway looked very similar to the front of the McFly house, just redressed.
Very true. We'll do just a quick prediction for next week's episode, and Chris Maley's question prompts us right into that. Now that they're going to be facing Dracula next week, or at least some vampires, do you think any of the legends get bit? Lex Muckle has a thought about next week's subject matter.
Do I?
Yes, you do. So please let that lead us into your prediction.
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Which thought was this?
Oh, about facing vampires.
Oh, well, when we saw this tag, my first reaction was like, okay, sweet, why not? Totally. But then my second thought was, there's, of course, the business in the teaser where it's like, vampires don't exist. This is far too preposterous. And I feel like we hit one of these every couple of episodes on Legends and here and there on every other show where they'll encounter something that seems so out there and crazy and they all go, this cannot possibly be. This is impossible. This is beyond all rational means of comprehension. And I'm sitting there going, like, you guys are friends with the Flash. Like, you're literally friends with the Flash. You fight metahumans every other hour. And I get it, like vampires, like something so specifically pulled from literature that we're all so familiar with. Yeah, I get there'd be a moment of like, whoa, weird. But given everything that all of these people have come up against, it's just so hard for me to go, this is the thing. It's so hard for me to think that anything would surprise them all that much. Frustrate and inconvenience, certainly. Truly, deeply surprise, less so. Having said that, the Legends fighting vampires, yes, I'm there for that.
All right, somebody gets bit, yes or no?
Almost certainly, because there's no, like, that's the most obvious way to juke up vampire drama is to have somebody get bit. Do I think anybody fully becomes a vampire on any permanent ongoing basis? No.
I would agree with that.
I think the threat of indefinite vampirism probably hangs over the head of at least one character.
Ivan Soto in the chat, as you said, first it's like the zombies last season. You were correct, our Civil War zombies. And Lex mentioned that too when we were watching that tag.
Yeah, but it was like there were zombies. There were like the weird bat monster people, right, yeah. In like season one, I think.
Yeah, and then, yeah. So, oh yeah, from that Halloween, that version of the Halloween episode too that they were fighting. That was all. It was all due through genetics. But anyway,
dang genetics.
Yes, and as Ivan Soto said a little bit earlier too, it's that the writers were definitely making this an homage to Back to the Future, to Amblin films.
To a lot of Amblin, yeah.
Which we do that, but I feel like sometimes those homages, like sometimes they're really nicely done, and sometimes they just are so. Like, so cheesily executed that you're like, ugh, boy. And I felt like this was a good example of...
I felt like they did a really good job.
Making some nods and doing it well.
Yes, exactly. Of working in all of those references, but not letting that be the episode. They were still telling a story that happened to have these references in it versus we want to reference a whole bunch of Amblin movies. Let's fabricate a story to string these references together.
All right. As we get ready to wrap up here, Lex Michael, I'm gonna guess your two truths and a lie. I'm going to say the lie is that you have three cats.
That is also the chat's prediction for the majority.
Okay, but most of the chat thinks I have more cats than that?
I think you have zero cats.
False, but that was the lie.
Oh, all right.
That was the lie. The lie is I do not have three cats at home. In fact, we have two.
Oh, well, look at you.
It was
all
just,
right.
It was a hair off. Was, in fact, born in Brazil. I am, in fact, in a David Cronenberg movie, uncredited. But if you guys go and check out Cronenberg's most recent movie, Maps to the Stars, in one of the first scenes, if not the first scene, Mia Wasikowska gets off a bus, and I get off the bus right behind her. I am the most, in this shot, I am the most visible thing that isn't Mia Wasikowska or a bus. And it's a close-up on her, so I'm pretty visible.
Nicely done.
This
all
is
right.
This is remains the highlight of my illustrious career.
But only, yeah, this is you're on an ascent, a rapid ascent. So great things are coming your way, Lex Michael. All right, would you care to take a guess before we go?
Oh, man. I feel like it's the shirts thing because that's so specific. And where would you keep that many shirts?
Most of the chat believes it is the country music.
I'm hoping it's the country music.
The chat is correct. It is the country
music.
It
is. Okay. So you've actually done. I feel so much better. So wait, you've actually done a count of all of the shirts you have.
It's a dark. It's dark. Dark.
I actually, you know what? Now that I think about it, I'm not sure I've ever seen you in the same T-shirt twice.
I maybe have because I get a little lazy sometimes.
Okay,
but
so you've actually done a count.
I could potentially go that far.
So you have
things not to be proud of.
So you have over 1,000 shirts.
Yeah, it's. I think of a deep fear of laundry. That's why I buy more shirts.
Like you could fill two rooms with that.
I could. That's gross.
All right, but real quick, can you give me like the short, the 2 seconds? Because I know we got to get out of here. Can you give me like the 2 second version of the story where David Carradine told you to what? Shut up or go away?
I was working at a show. We were doing a makeover, and we had to reshoot a scene with him. And I was giving him some directions, and he was already irritated. And he put his hand right in my face and yelled, "Hush." I'll tell you more later, but yes, David Carradine once put his hand right in my face like this and screamed at me to hush.
That means you're practically Hollywood royalty.
That's right. There you go. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this episode of the Legends of Tomorrow After Show. Thanks for sticking around with us a little bit longer than usual. Thanks for playing this little game with us. We really appreciated you sticking around with us in the chat as well. And as always, folks, you can like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, not just for us, but more importantly for Lex Michael.
Oh, that's right. Going. Yes, I may die.
Yes, that's right. Very casually. Just, I may die. Whatever.
You know, we all might.
That's true.
We all will.
And if you want to continue the conversation with us even after the show's over, Lex, Michael, where can they find you?
I am all over social media at TheLexMichael. I'm also here at AfterBuzz talking about Supergirl on Monday nights. I do Comic Book Exchange with Frank Moran and Lucretia Lyon on Wednesday nights on Book Circle Online. And Tari J. Miller, who you may know if you watch other shows here at AfterBuzz, and I do our own podcast called Missing Out, where we show each other different pieces of media that we are very fond of that the other person may have missed based on our varying cultural backgrounds. We just started bringing on guests. We had on your Lucretia Lyon. We had on your Dave Child. We're going to have on your Frank Moran if we can afford his quote. Frank is very, very expensive. But go check out that show. We're very proud of it. We have a great time doing it. Find us on Twitter at Missing Outcast and also wherever you can find podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play place. Check us out. Missing Out. We like it. We like you. Mwah.
Look at that. It's a must listen to podcast, folks. You deserve You deserve to give your ears that special treat. Ladies and gentlemen, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. Everybody, we'll be back here four strong next week for the Legends of Tomorrow After Show right here on AfterBuzz TV. Speed off.
Swamp off.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Hush.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.